Handy Irish Genealogy Handbook, Gary L. Morris, copyright 2015, Gary L. Morris, ISBN 13978-1511409247, ISBN 10-151-140924-X. Table of Contents, Introduction 4, 5, Compiling a Family Group History 6, 7, The Ahonan Tafel System 8-10, Beginning Your Research 11, 12, Tracing Irish Surnames 13-16, Irish Places and Place Names 17, Types of Irish Addresses 18-20, Separation of North and South 21, 22, Record Destruction 23, Census Records 24-28, Substitutes for Census 29-32, Civil Registrations 33-36, Online Vital Records Databases 37, 38, Parish Records 39, 40, Land Commission Records 41-43, Griffiths Valuation 44, 45, Poor Law Records 46-48, Military Records 49, 50, Probate Records 51, 17th and 18th Century Records 52-57, Important Depositories and Online Resources 58-65, Notes, Introduction. Since the beginning of the 18th century, nearly 10 million Irish emigrated overseas. Of that 10 million, almost half went to the United States, the majority of the others going to the United Kingdom, Canada and Australia and New Zealand. Some of them ventured farther south to Brazil, Argentina and Mexico, and even South Africa. An illuminating statistic as to the expanse of the Irish diaspora is that in 1890, only 60% of the total world population of Irish were living in Ireland, the rest scattered abroad. This worldwide emigration of the Irish has led to nearly 80 million people around the world claiming Irish ancestry. Irish genealogy has become increasingly popular, with many attempting to trace their Irish heritage back to their ancestors or relatives now living in the mother country. Many expect to find themselves related to the great Celtic chieftains and warlords of legend, only to be discouraged when they lose track of their lineage at an early stage. This practical booklet will seek to eliminate those elements of frustration by showing you step by step how to trace your Irish ancestry and what to do if you get stuck. Tracing Irish ancestry has its own set of challenges as well as many unique rewards. There are many historical and genealogical records available for your ancestor, and we know just where to find them. To get you started in tracing your ancestry, we will introduce you to the various record types and help you to understand 1. What they are 2. Where to find them 3. How to use them. These records can be found both online and off, so we'll introduce you to online websites, indexes and databases, as well as brick-and-mortar repositories and other institutions that will help with your research. Each of the important elements of a genealogical search is introduced and explained. We'll show you what records to search, how to find them, and how to make the most of the information you'll find within. There are intricacies of a genealogical search, little tricks you might say, that we'll teach you, so that you are fully research-equipped and ready. Most of all, this booklet hopes to show you how to have fun while undertaking a journey that can be as exasperating as it can be rewarding, a trip into the past to find your Irish ancestors. Compiling a family group history. Okay, you've made the decision to undertake a search of your family history to find your Irish ancestors. Like any journey of 1,000 steps, your genealogical excursion will start with the first. Before you even commence looking for information, you will want to have an efficient and orderly storage and retrieval system in place. Filing your genealogical data accurately and safely is so important, the entire success of your search relies on it. You can find all of the ancestors in the world, but if you don't record the information properly, you could lose them again just as quickly. There can be nothing more disappointing than spending months, or even years, tracking down an ancestor only to lose their information before actually constructing your family tree or being able to share your findings with others. Please take this step very carefully. Think of it as preparing the genealogical soil out of which your family tree will grow. Before you enter the information you'll discover on an actual family tree type chart, you'll have to confirm it and authenticate it. Charting your family history in tree form is actually one of the final steps of a genealogical search. Storing the information you gather is known as compiling a family group history. This is a file that you'll create to store information as you collect it, a system of indexing. I'll use the term frequently, as a referral during the course of this booklet, so familiarize yourself with its meaning. The best method of storing your information is to designate a page to each relative. This way each ancestor has his or her section, and everything relating to that person is together in one place. In order to index your family history so that it's easily understandable for yourself and others, there is a system of numbering that allows for quick identification of ancestral relationships at a glance. This is called the Ahonen-Tafel method. The Ahonen-Tafel system designates each ancestor number, and I recommend using it as the basis for your filing system. It's easy to use, and once mastered will save you lots of time and energy, which you'll greatly appreciate, as you delve deeper into your genealogical search. Blank forms for your family group history. Downloadable and printable blank forms are available on the internet for free at several websites. The form at each site is slightly different, so check them all to find the right fit for your project. The best blank forms can be found at Ancestry.com, http://www.ancestry.com. Download Midwest Genealogy Center, http://www.mymcpl.org. Genealogy Family History Forms MISPAC.org, http://MISPAC.org. Free PDF Charts HTML Roots Web, http://HelpDeskRootsWeb.com. Get Started Charts Forms HTML Family Tree Magazine, http://FamilyTreeMagazine.com. Free Forms The Ahonen-Tafel System. The Ahonen-Tafel method was developed by an Austrian genealogist to enable efficiency of recording ancestor information and recognizing relationships between ancestors. The term or word Ahonen-Tafel literally translated means ancestor table, and though it sounds like it could be complicated, it really is amazingly simple. Using the Ahonen-Tafel method to index your family ancestor history will make it much easier to enter the information into your family tree chart once you've arrived at that point. The following is an explanation of how it works. Every person in the Ahonen-Tafel system has a number that denotes a relationship between parents and children. The first person in an ancestral pedigree is designated number 1. If you are compiling your own family tree, you would index yourself as number 1. Subsequently, the father of each person is doubled that person's number, their mother is their number doubled plus 1. Therefore, your father would be number 2, your mother number 3. Written out in index form, a three-generational index would look like this: 1. Self 2. Self's father 3. Self's mother 4. Self's father's father paternal grandfather 5. Self's father's mother paternal grandmother 6. Self's mother's father maternal grandfather 7. Self's mother's mother maternal grandmother summary. It must be clear that these numbers will not be page numbers, but rather a section number. You can number the pages for each relative individually. You can create a sub-index for each relative or section if you like. As an example, my father would be number 1 on my main index. Within my binder would be a divider with my father's name on it. The first page within would be a sub-index listing the information contained on each separate page. My father's vitals statistics, his birth, death and marriage dates, occupation, associations and memberships, even height, weight and color of eyes optional would be listed on the first page, and subsequently indexed, etc. Information is easy to retrieve this way. If you need information on a particular relative, you simply consult the main index. Say you need the birth certificate of your maternal grandmother, you simply turn to section 7, consult the sub-index within. Oh yes, it's on page 3 of your grandmother's file. This system makes it possible for several people to participate in your family search and also for someone to continue at some point in the future. Once you have your family group history file ready to receive the information you will gather, it's time to go and get it. All of today's genealogy software programs are capable of producing Ahonen-Tafel charts, but you can also create one by hand or with your word processor. Whichever method you choose, an Ahonen-Tafel is an easy method of sharing a lot of ancestral information in a concise manner. Here are some of the most popular free genealogy programs for your computer. Roots Magic Essentials, http://www.rootsmagic.com. Gramps, free or make a contribution, https, Gramps Project Org Legacy Standard, http, www.legacyfamilitree.com. Beginning the information harvest. Start off at home. Before you go abroad or even outside of your home with your search, first collect and record all the first-hand information you have at your disposal. Write the full names of everyone you know into your family group history on the index page under the appropriate number, as explained under the AHAN and TEFL system. Write in all the information you have on them: birth, marriage and death dates and places. This is most easily done by including this vital info on the cover page of each ancestor section within your binder. Once you've listed everyone on your index and written in their information, you'll know where the gaps are, and in what direction you need to continue. You may be lacking a good bit of information at this point, but don't fret. Realizing the extent of your knowledge is key to having a clear concept of the road ahead. Filling in the gaps after you've written down everything you personally know, it's time to start conferring with other family members. This can be an adventure in itself. You will find yourself meeting and spending time with relatives you haven't seen for a long time or ever even met. This is one of the rewards of a genealogical pursuit. Not only do you get to know your ancestors of the past, but you will better know your living relatives. Older relatives especially are a rich source of input, but keep in mind failing memories may reveal a bit of inaccurate data, so everything will have to be eventually authenticated. If nothing else, you'll be ably entertained, a rich reward in itself. Begin your immediate search by obtaining all of the written documentation you can get your hands on and make copies of it. Diaries, old family Bibles and scrapbooks can be invaluable and yield untold amounts of useful information. Some relatives might not want to part with valuable or precious documentation or pictures, so it is worthwhile to invest in a decent digital camera. This way you can simply photograph these things, and even possibly enhance them a bit with some decent software. After you've exhausted your family sources, it's time to move outside. Your local library may have copies of civil registers that you can search. Civil registry in most countries didn't begin until the 19th century, so what you find may only be relatively recent info. The good thing is that churches held their own records for much longer than that, and a search of the records of the church your grandparents belonged to may provide you with a connection to the next generation. When you have completed your local search, it's time to move overseas. The rest of this book will provide you with Irish-specific information that will hopefully make it easier for you to find your Irish ancestors. Tracing Irish surnames. Identification by surname is the first stage of establishing the identities of your ancestors. Your surname provides you with an important link to your past, so it is worth investigating its origins as much as possible during the early part of your genealogical search. Irish surnames can be comprised of many different elements, the origins of which can be Norman, Gaelic, Jewish, British, Scottish, even Quaker or Huguenot. Narrowing down your family surname to its origin can save you a lot of time and resources when pursuing your family's past, by helping you to know exactly which records to search. History of Irish surnames. Modern Irish surnames reflect the rich history of the Emerald Isle and the people who settled there. Though there is such a vast background of names and their associated history, a positive aspect of having an Irish ancestor is that Ireland was one of the first countries to establish a system of hereditary surnames, the practice of passing the family name on to the next generation. This practice began in Ireland as early as the 11th century compared to countries like Britain, who didn't implement the system until the 13th and 14th centuries. This inception in Ireland was highly influenced by the church, and Irish prefixes like Gil and Kil mean follower of. The first Irish surnames. The oldest Irish surnames are those beginning with Mac dash meaning son of, Gil or Kil mentioned previously, and those containing Mal Irish dash M-A-O-L, which means bald, which designated a person as a follower of a certain monk. The term O was consequently added, meaning descendant of. Thus Barry O'Neill meant that Barry was a descendant of Neil. Soon different adaptations and applications of the prefixes were introduced to spawn a wide variety of Irish surnames. The origins of today's Irish surnames. The Norman influence. The first settlers to extend their influence to Irish surnames were the Anglo-Normans. In fact, the English name for Ireland's capital Dublin comes from the Irish Dublin meaning Blackpool, which is Norman-influenced. The Normans arrived in Ireland during the 12th century and integrated quickly into Irish society. They brought their own distinctive surnames, however, which included Fitzgerald, Power, Burke, and Walsh, to name a few. These names can be found throughout Ireland today. The German and Jewish influence war and the coldest winter in 100 years 1708-1709 drove many Germans from their homeland in the Rhineland between 1650 and 1750. Many went to America, but some immigrated to Ireland. They did not integrate well and kept mostly to themselves, but they did contribute names such as Switzer and Ruddle. Many of them did eventually integrate though and took Irish names, especially those of second, third and fourth generations. The Jews who arrived from Eastern Europe came to escape religious prosecution towards the end of the 19th century. They brought their distinctive names such as Greenberg, Cohen, and Jaffe. The English and Scottish influence in the 16th century. Large areas of the Irish Midlands were confiscated by the British government and handed over to English families. The English settlers brought with them names like Spencer, Brown and of course Smith. An important difference between the English influence and that of the Normans is that rather than translate their names to an Irish form as did the Normans, the English forced the Irish to anglicize theirs. An excellent example of this lies with the name MacGabhan. Gabhan was the Irish name for blacksmith, thus MacGabhan meant son of a blacksmith. The English equivalent was Smith, and so by force or threat of it, many MacGabhans were forced to change their name to Smith, especially in the County Cavan area. Keep this in mind if you're searching an ancestor by either name, and especially in and around Cavan. Those who didn't change their name to Smith changed it to today's English version of Mac McGowan. These sorts of translations and mistranslations have caused much confusion over the origins of certain Irish surnames, so be prepared. And if you can educate yourself a little more on your own particular surname and its beginnings. Scottish settlers arrived after the British government encouraged their subjects to buy up Irish land, and many did. These Scots who came to Ireland at this time were known as planters, and they introduced names like Patterson, Ferguson, and Stewart. These Scottish settlers were mainly Presbyterians, and some of their records may be found within churches of that religion. Local influence. Certain Irish surnames can be associated with particular areas in Ireland. For instance, in Donegal the name McNeill is prominent, while Company Cavan is home to many MacGowans. If you travel to West Cork you'll find Ajalavans everywhere, and being privy to this sort of information can get you a little quicker to where you want to be in your family history search. Don't make a mistake, though, of assuming everyone in a particular area is your ancestor, and substantiate any connections with as much other information as possible. Irish surnames have been much corrupted over the course of history, and this is important to keep in mind when doing your research. If you have the surname Burns, your ancestor could have spelt it Burns, Cairns could be Carnes, and Mac Owen could have been the Irish Mac Eowyn. Apply yourself diligently to your research, and you will be rewarded tenfold. It's important to know the ins and outs of your Irish surname, and it's equally important to know a bit about where they lived. Irish places and place names. If you're trying to trace your ancestors in Ireland, you want to make sure that you have as accurate an idea as possible to where they hailed from. If you only know the county that they live in, you might not be able to locate them. Irish addresses range from the quite detailed to the very vague. But generally speaking, the more precise the address you have, the better your chances of finding them. Addresses are a simple way of finding someone, but sometimes they are too simple or too complicated. This article will help you to familiarize yourself with Irish address terminology, so that you stand a better chance of tracking down your family member. The addresses in Ireland are generally in townland, street or parish, and these are the most useful forms found in Irish address terminology. Remember also that surnames can sometimes lead you to a person's homeland. There is a very useful publication known as the General Alphabetical Index to the Townlands and Towns of Ireland that will help you to identify whether your ancestor's address is in town or townland form. A townland can be located within a barony, within a parish, within a county district, within a district electoral division. As you can imagine, Irish addresses can get quite confusing, but don't despair, I'll explain the different terms to you in the following pages. Types of Irish addresses. Different records within Ireland are classified according to their geographical location. Knowing the different names of these locations will give you an advantage in finding the records you're looking for. The following are the various types of administrative address units used in Ireland. Provinces. Ulster, Leinster, Connaught and Munster are the four provinces of Ireland. You may be familiar with some of these names already. During the times of the Troubles in Ireland, Ulster was mentioned frequently in the news around the world. Ulster is basically Northern Ireland. Leinster and Munster are the biggest rivals in GAA or Gaelic games. Munster is the south of Ireland and includes areas like Cork, Kerry and Tipperary. Leinster is the east of Ireland of which Dublin is a part. The west of Ireland Galway and Dingle area is Connaught. Counties are leftover from the English era in Ireland. The counties in Ireland are modeled on the English Shire and some have been around since the 12th century. The counties in the Ireland of today are Republic of Ireland, Carlow, Cavan, Clare, Cork, Donegal, Dublin, Galway, Kerry, Kildare, Kilkenny, Leigh, Leitrim, Limerick, Longford, Louth, Mayo, Meath, Monaghan, Offaly, Roscommon, Sligo, Tipperary, Waterford, Westmeath, Wicklow, and Wexford. Northern Ireland, Antrim, Armagh, Down, Fermanagh, Londonderry and Tyrone. You may come across the name County Coleraine in relation to your Irish relative. Don't worry, this was the original name of County Londonderry in Northern Ireland. Any records regarding County Coleraine will be held under the County Londonderry offices. Baronies. The barony is an important county subdivision, and usually number between 7 and 10 per county. Cork has an exceedingly high number with 20, while Louth has only 5. In total there are 331 baronies in Ireland, and occasionally a barony will occupy parts of two different counties. The barony is believed to be type of Norman division, and though they have been obsolete for over 100 years, you will encounter them in searches preceding 1900. Civil parishes. Over 2,000 civil parishes exist in Ireland, and they have been in existence since the religious reformation of the 16th century. These are an ecclesiastical division, which often extends over the boundaries of baronies and counties. They are important administrative divisions within Ireland, especially when researching Catholic ancestry. The Church of Ireland was the established state church and accordingly carried out some civil duties, such as the religious survey of 1766 and the probating of wills. Parish registers can also be useful in searching for any records that predate the establishment of civil registration. Townlands. Townlands are the smallest administrative divisions in Ireland and you will frequently encounter them during your research. There are presently over 60,000 townlands in Ireland, the average size being around 350 acres. Individual size can vary immensely though, the smallest being only 1 acre in size, while the largest is the 7,012-acre Siskin in County Mayo. Townlands pose their own unique problem in that many of them have the same name. This is where the value of counties and baronies comes in. Knowing the names of the county and the barony of the townland you are researching will overcome that difficulty. The publication mentioned at the beginning of this article the General Alphabetical Index to the Townlands and Towns of Ireland can be useful at this point for identifying county, barony and even civil parishes related to townlands. County district and district electoral divisions. A new division was introduced to Ireland with the Poor Law Act of 1838. This division was known as the Poor Law Union and Ireland was initially divided into 130 of them. These districts each encompassed multiple townlands and a market town at its core. A workhouse was built in each central town to provide relief to the poor of the area, and this is also why workhouse records can be of value to the genealogist. In 1851, the Medical Charities Act subdivided the existing poor law unions into dispensary districts, which were used for registering births and deaths. These grew into the county district and district electoral divisions of modern Ireland. The separation of North and South complications for the researcher were created when Ireland was divided into the North and South segments we have today. The setting up of two different states out of the previous one resulted in the inevitable loss or destruction of important and valuable records. Some records regarding the northern counties of Down, Derry, Armagh, Antrim, Fermanagh and Tyrone, that had previously been held in Dublin were dispatched to the north and are now scattered amongst various repositories, which could make them difficult to track down. Boundary change is another factor that family historians could encounter is boundary changes. Some demarcation lines around Ireland have been unstable over the years, thus several townlands that may have existed in the 17th century surveys have since disappeared. These boundary changes would also have encompassed parishes, and the creation of new parishes from sections of older ones can be particularly confusing for researchers. Valuable resources regarding address research. It is a fairly recent publication listing census substitute, Roman Catholic Church records, gravestone inscriptions, wells and administrations and other miscellaneous resources and their location. A Guide to Irish Parish Registers by Brian Mitchell, ISBN 13 9780806312156, ISBN 10 0806312157, is also a very useful publication for gathering information of the parish registers of every denomination. Brian Mitchell has also published a book entitled A New Genealogical Atlas of Ireland, ISBN 13 9780806311524, ISBN 10 0806311525, in which all of Ireland's 2,508 civil parishes are mapped and clearly identified. This book will help you to easily locate counties, baronies, civil parishes and dioceses, poor law unions and probate districts, all relative to modern-day addresses. Record destruction. The National Archives of Ireland have been ravaged by fire, carelessness, and mindless pilfering over the centuries. As early as 1304, fire was responsible for destroying valuable documents, when the records of the Court of Chancery were burned in St. Mary's Abbey where they were stored. In 1537, the record keepers of Dublin Castle were found to have stolen, or allowed others to steal, numerous documents in their custody. In 1758, the Birmingham Tower, the sole repository for government records of the time, was destroyed by fire, resulting in a huge loss of data. Fire was again responsible for destroying records of the Surveyor General's office in 1711, and the National Archives were further depleted by government officials, who treated public records as their own personal property, taking the documents with them whenever they left office or retired. Of course, the Irish Civil War was responsible for destroying its share of records as well. When the British handed over the Public Record Office to the Provisional Government in 1922, it was immediately occupied by regular forces, who turned the depository into a bomb factory. When the Provisional Government recaptured the Four Courts building, the destruction was immense, with public records picked up in the streets miles away from the resultant bombardment. This was a terrible tragedy in which the explosions of two heavy mines in the record treasury destroyed centuries of work. The Irish government has since made efforts to make up for the loss, and some records have been restored. We will direct you to substitutes for lost records on individual records pages. Census returns. Modern census began in Ireland in the year 1821. At this time, enumerators began calling on Irish households with a view to recording data on the inhabitants within. Their duties were to record the names, ages, occupations and the relationships of each of the inhabitants to the head of the household. Another requirement was for the property size and acreage be recorded, and also how many stories each dwelling contained. It is believed that this particular census was the best ever taken in Ireland in terms of practical application. The census was used as a model for subsequent ones, and those census reports taken in Ireland between 1841 and 1871 are considered to be unrivaled in accuracy and efficiency by any other country. Unfortunately, these historical milestones from 1821, 1831, 1841 and 1851 were destroyed in the attack on the Four Courts building in 1922. This great collection had given the name and details of every man, woman and child living in Ireland in the first half of the 19th century, and is the saddest loss of genealogical information one is liable to encounter. Those of 1861-1891 fared little better, many being pulped for the war effort between 1914 and 1918. There are fragments of these reports in existence, so don't completely discard them. You never know, you just might get lucky. How to find your ancestor in the census report. The 1901 and 1911 census reports are the first complete returns to survive the turmoil of Ireland's history. These records, held in the National Archives in Dublin, provide the genealogist with a wealth of information. These later censuses followed the blueprint of their predecessors and contain information on age, family relationships, literacy, marital status, place of origin, and other miscellaneous information. They not only provide you with data, but also a glimpse of what life was like at the time. To find your ancestor, you only need to know their address at the time the census was taken. If your ancestor resided in a town, you need to have his or her street address. If they lived out in the country, you'll need to know the name of their townland. If you don't have their address, a search of birth, death and marriage records should reveal it. The 1901 and 1911 censuses are arranged by household and list each member of the home as well as relatives, servants and even visitors, who may have been present at the time the enumerator recorded the information. Details such as each member's relationship to the head of the household, age, occupation, religion, literacy level, marital status, language spoken, country of birth and any physical handicaps they may have had were recorded. How to use census information. The wealth of information included in census reports can be used in a variety of ways. For instance, with a person's age you can estimate their year of birth. This is particularly helpful if they were born before 1864, as their birth would not have been entered into any birth register as yet. Use the ages found in census reports guardedly, as many of them were estimated by the enterers. A guide of 10 years either way should be considered when making your own estimation. The description of the place of dwelling and the number of occupants and servant can be used to cast light on the social and economic status of your ancestors. Thus, information can be useful in helping you decide whether to look into estate records or workhouse and poor union records. The origin of birth can help you to follow the movement of your relatives through the centuries. In the case of large cities like Belfast and Dublin, this can be particularly helpful, as they grew tremendously in the late 19th century, and they received a large influx of people from both the countryside and overseas. An interesting requirement of married women was that they had to state how long they had been married at the time, thus the marriage date can be established and a possible marriage certificate found. As I mentioned before, there are some surviving fragments of the earlier 19th century reports kept in the National Archives in Dublin and the Public Record Office in Northern Ireland. They do not contain as detailed information as the latter reports, but are definitely worth consulting, and can be especially helpful in revealing ancestors who may have emigrated from Ireland. Where to find Irish census records. Now that you understand a bit more about Irish census reports and what they contain, it's time to track down those of your ancestor. Following is a compilation of every major source of Irish census records, both online and off. The listing includes archives and libraries, genealogical and historical organizations, and online websites, where you can browse either indexes or the census records themselves. Good luck and happy ancestor hunting! National Archives of Ireland. Census of Ireland 1901, 1911 and Census Fragments and Substitutes, 1821-51 Bishop Street, Dublin 8, Ireland. Phone, +353 01 407 2300. Low call, plus 353, 1,890, 252,424 fax, plus 353, 0, 1, 407, 2,333 email, mail at nationalarchives.ie National Archives of Ireland http www.census.nationalarchives.ie genealogy a searchable database containing data transcribed from the 1901 Census of Ireland for Leitrim, Roscommon, Mayo and Sligo and other CoS. The database is complete for all of Roscommon, Leitrim, Mayo and Sligo. All of the other counties are still under development and are online for limited searching. Leitrimroscommon genealogy, http www.leitrimroscommon.com General Register Office Northern Ireland Oxford House 49-55 Chichester Street Belfast BT1, 4HL, Northern Ireland. Tell, plus 44, 0, 28, 9151, 3101, email. giro.nisra@dfpni.gov.uk General Register Office, http www.nidirect.gov.uk Grow the LDS Family History Libraries have the following indexes, which can be searched at their various locations around the world. 1821 census list for every member of the household name, age, occupation, and relationship to the head of the household. 1831 census lists only the head of the household, the number of children and adults in the household, and the religion of each household member. 1841 census lists for every member of the household name, age, sex, relationship to the head of the household, marital status, occupation, and birthplace. 1851 census lists the same information as the 1841 census. In addition, it has two schedules that were filled out if applicable. LDS Family History Libraries, HTTPS, Family Search org location substitutes for census records. Due to the extent of the record destruction in Ireland, many records, especially census reports, have been lost forever. There are other records that, like censuses, provide lists of individuals who lived in specific areas. They are extremely useful as substitutes for the destroyed national censuses, and for the centuries before a national census was implemented. These substitutes can provide the name, age, religion, occupation, residence, relationships, and/or the value of the property of the individuals they list. Here are the most valuable Ireland census substitutes. The Pender Census of 1659. This census was most likely taken during Petty Survey between December 1654 and 1659. It provides the names of the largest estate owners in Ireland at the time in addition to the numbers of Catholics and Protestants residing in each parish. The original clan names are also noted with the numbers of individuals of that surname. It may be purchased on Amazon or from the Irish Manuscripts Commission. Otherwise it may be found in the reading room at the National Library of Ireland call number, ear 94106C27. Amazon, http, www.amazon.com Census Ireland circa 1659 Supplementary DP08063471555 Irish Manuscripts Commission, http. www.irishmanuscripts.ie Servlet Controller Action Publication Item and PID 8 The National Library of Ireland Kildare Street, Dublin 2 Telephone, plus 353-1-603-0200 Fax, plus 353-1-661-25-23 Email, info at nli.ie web link, http, catalog me e record vtls 00045103 Civil Survey The Civil Survey was a survey of the holdings of landowners, their titles and tenures of their estates. Taken from 1654-circa 1660. It included 27 counties covering the provinces of Leinster, Ulster, Munster and part of Connaught. The LDS Family History Libraries have copies. Family History Library Book 941.5R2C. As does the National Library of Ireland in Dublin, call number IR 9141C12. LDS Family History Libraries, https, FamilySearch.org locations. National Library of Ireland, Kildare Street, Dublin 2. Telephone, +353 1-603-0200. Fax, +353 1-661-25-23. Email, info@nli.ie. Web link, http, catalog lee record vtls 00011217. Books of survey and distribution. These were compiled C1700 and the books of survey and distribution, compiled C1700, are an official record of landed proprietors and their estates. They were designed to access rents based on acreage referred to as the quit rent. This was payable every year based on land granted under the 1662 Act of Settlement and the subsequent 1665 Act of Explanation. Printed volumes are available for the counties of Clare, Galway, Mayo, and Roscommon. A typewritten manuscript is available for the County of Louth from the Genealogical Office, Dublin, a branch of the National Library. The LDS Family History Libraries have the following copies: Symington, Robert C. Books of Survey and Distribution, County of Roscommon. Family History Library Book British 941.5B4B Volume 1. Symington, Robert C. Books of Survey and Distribution, County of Mayo. Family History Library Book British 941.5B4B Volume 2. Magdala Cawlil, Brienne N. Books of Survey and Distribution, County of Galway. Family History Library Book British 941.5B4B Volume 3. Symington, Robert C. and Brienne N. Magdala Coyle. Books of Survey and Distribution, being abstracts of various surveys and instruments of title, 1636-1703, County of Clare. Family History Library Book British 941.5B4B Volume 4. Genealogical Office. Books of Survey and Distribution, County Louth, 1659. Unpublished Manuscript Number 541. Dublin, Genealogical Office. Family History Library Microfilm 100225, Item 3. Muster rolls. These are roll calls of officers and enlisted men in Irish and British regiments for the 17th-20th centuries. A detailed listing of these records is found in Gibson, Jeremy and Alan Dell. Tudor and Stuart Muster Rolls, a directory of holdings in the British Isles, Birmingham, England, Federation of Family History Societies, 1989. Family History Library Book British 942M2GJ. Extracts of muster rolls are also deposited in the Public Record Office of Northern Ireland, Belfast. Public Record Office of Northern Ireland 2 Titanic Boulevard, Titanic Quarter, Belfast, BD3, 9HQ. Email proni@dcalni.gov.uk. Telephone, +44 028 90 534 800. Website, http://www.proni.gov.uk. The Family History Libraries have the following on microfilm: Muster Rolls, 1698-1770. Family History Library Microfilm 258512. Muster Rolls, 1743-1757. Family History Library Microfilm 258513. Muster Rolls, 1757-1800. Family History Library Microfilm 258514. Muster Rolls, 1800-1805. Family History Library Microfilm 258515. Muster Rolls, 1805-1825 Family History Library Microfilm 258,515 Civil Registrations in Ireland New Year's Day of 1864 saw the beginning of civil registration in Ireland, and all births, deaths and marriages have been recorded since, at least in theory. Some births went unrecorded, especially in the early stages of civil registration and particularly with country folk, who may have had to travel long distances to register. The following is a summary of what these registers contain and where to find them if searching for an ancestor who was Irish. Birth certificates. The Irish birth certificate contains 4. Person's date of birth 5. Name of person 6. Sex of person 7. Mother's maiden name 8. Father's name, address and occupation 9. Informant's name, residence and qualification. Usually their relationship with the subject or legal standing at the head of the birth certificate will be found the name of the county and the division within in which the birth was originally registered. The real value of an Irish birth certificate is that it can provide you with the difficult-to-find name of the town and where your ancestor was born. A bit of caution should be exercised with the actual birth date on these certificates, as sometimes the birth was recorded sometime after the actual event. Fines were imposed on those who waited too long, so occasionally the dates were fiddled. Marriage certificates. Marriage certificates provide a wide range of useful information, and because they contain the names of both parties, are often the easiest civil records to locate. Marriage certificates contain many details which may prove useful to a genealogist, even providing a link or lead to the next generation. They will tell you name of the parish, the poor law union and county name of church, date of marriage, names of bride and groom, ages of bride and groom, occupation, rank or profession of married parties, address of married parties, names and occupations of fathers of bride and groom, names of witnesses, death certificates. Death certificates are considered the least prized of civil registration papers by genealogists. This is due to the common inaccuracies they might contain. Some ages in death certificates can be up to 10 years off, and cannot be guaranteed to be correct. Often the heads of families rounded off the ages of their dead relatives to the nearest whole number, so differences of 4 and 5 years are quite common. They can provide you though with 8. Location of death 9. Former occupation of the deceased 10. Cause of death 11. Name of the informant and their relationship with the deceased. The age, though possibly inaccurate, can provide you with an approximate guide as to when the person was born, which will help in your search of a birth certificate. How to obtain an Irish birth, death or marriage certificate. All records that predate the separation of Northern Ireland and the now Republic of Ireland are held at the General Register's office in Roscommon. The GRO also maintain a genealogical family history research facility at 3rd floor, Block 7, Irish Life Centre, Lower Abbey Street, Dublin 1. https://www.welfare.ie/n Pages. General Register Office asks the research facility is open Monday to Friday, excluding public holidays, from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. for the purpose of searching indexes to birth, death and marriage records and for obtaining photocopies of records identified from the indexes. Indexes in relation to the following records of life events are available for inspection at the research facility. 1. Births registered in the island of Ireland between 1 January 1864 and 31 December 1921 inclusive and in Ireland excluding the 6 northeastern counties of Derry, Antrim, Down, Armagh, Fermanagh, and Tyrone known as Northern Ireland from 1922 onwards. 2. Deaths registered in the island of Ireland between 1 January 1864 and 31 December 1921 inclusive and in Ireland excluding Northern Ireland from 1922 onwards. 3. Non-Roman Catholic marriages registered in the island of Ireland between 1 April 1845 and 31 December 1863 inclusive. 4. Marriages registered in the island of Ireland between 1 January 1864 and 31 December 1921 inclusive and in Ireland excluding Northern Ireland from 1922 onwards. 5. Legal domestic adoptions registered in Ireland from 10th July 1953 onwards. Online databases for Irish vital records. If you have vital information on your ancestor, obtaining the relevant certificate is a fairly easy process. The Irish government now makes this service available online, and with a few clicks of the mouse you can download and fill out an application form. The website of the General Registration Office is http://www.groirland.ie and they issue certified copies of all certificates. The GRO website also provides other useful information regarding their research facility and what other records they have available at their location in Dublin. If your ancestor was from Northern Ireland, the relevant website to order a copy from is http://www.groni.gov.uk/htm. Due to the popularity of genealogy today, there are a growing number of other online databases available to the public. For most, there is a fee that varies from website to website and is dependent on the type of search involved. Below is a listing of tried and trusted websites where you can access online databases and associated records. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has an extensive microfilm collection of Irish civil registers. These can be ordered via their website at http://www.familysearch.org and library FHLC frame use at FHLC ASP. The Irish Family History Foundation has begun compiling an online database that now contains the largest collection of parish records for the island of Ireland that are searchable online. The organization is the co-coordinating body for a network of government-approved genealogical research centers in the Republic of Ireland and in Northern Ireland. They have computerized nearly 40 million Irish ancestral records, primarily church births, baptisms, marriages, and deaths. Keep in mind that the database is not yet complete, but their website makes it very clear which records are available and which not. Worth a visit at http://www.ifhf.brsgenealogy.com. The Irish Genealogy website has indexes for birth records over 100 years, marriage records over 75 years and death records over 50 years, that can be searched online at http. Civil Records Irish Genealogy e-Family Search has the following indexes that can be searched online for free: Ireland Civil Registration Indexes, 1845-1958-https, FamilySearch.org Search Collection 1,408,347 Ireland Births and Baptisms, 1620-1881-https. FamilySearch.org Search Collection 1,584,963 Ireland Deaths, 1864-1870-https. FamilySearch.org Search Collection 1,584,965 Ireland Marriages, 1619-1898-https. FamilySearch.org Search Collection 1,584,964 Catholic Parish Records in Catholic Parish Registers, one will find the recording of baptisms and marriages. Baptism records will contain 12. Date of baptism 13. Mother's maiden name 14. Names of two sponsors. Occasionally the address of the family is given in the form of the townland in which they lived, but not always. Marriage entries contain the names of the bride and groom, the names of their witnesses, and the date of the marriage. Marriages normally took place in the bride's home and were recorded in the local parish register. Though parish registers can prove useful, they often can be incomplete and inaccurate as well. There were no legislative incentives for the church to maintain accurate and complete records, and there is the factor of human error to consider as well. Basically, there are three things which combine to make the registers difficult to decipher. They are: poor physical condition of the records, dampness and poor quality paper have contributed to their deterioration over the years. Illegible handwriting. Some written in Latin using parish records. While parish records can be very fruitful in yielding family information, they can be difficult and frustrating to use because of the reasons mentioned above. Using them, however, has been made easier over the past decade. Many parish records have been indexed and digitalized to allow easy access for the genealogist. The National Library of Ireland has also microfilmed most and has made them available to the public at their site in Dublin. Some registers involve getting permission in the form of written consent from the parish priest before you can access them. Their contact information can be found in the Catholic Directory, which is published annually and can be found in most libraries. In Northern Ireland, the Public Record Office has copies of the Catholic registers for its counties. Because the parish registers are not public records, they have not been made available online. However, the National Library has a family history information leaflet entitled Parish Registers in the National Library of Ireland, which can be downloaded from their website at http://www.nli.ien/parish-register/land-commission-records. The Land Commission was designed and developed to fix fair rents, where disputes existed between landlords and tenants. There are an estimated 6 million documents in its archives, which are arranged by county and filed in volumes. The Land Commission was also entrusted with making loans from public funds to tenants who wished to purchase the farms on which they toiled and resided. Over time, this actually became its main function, and the bulk of its archive is related to the purchase of land. As you can imagine, this vast archive has the potential to be a genealogical goldmine. How it functioned: when a tenant desired to purchase land from his landlord, the estate was first examined by surveyors from the Land Commission. They recorded the names of the tenants and the acreage of the land they wished to purchase and prepared maps, which showed the boundaries of the surrounding farms. Following the survey and its inspection, a report was drawn up for each estate. These documents certified the value of the land and therefore deemed it suitable security for the loan required to purchase it. They also showed the amount of rent paid by each tenant and the annuity required by the Land Commission after the purchase was secured. What the collection contains: documents of title form a major part of the Land Commission assortment of records, and consist of a description of the lands being sold. The collection also contains deeds, wills, mortgages and other documents, as such as sureties and witness statements. Some documents date back to the 1600s, and if nothing else, can be of great historical interest to browse. Documents of purchase were the legal instruments which transferred ownership of the lands from landlord to tenant, and may be of interest if your ancestor lived in the country. Where to find them? To access the records of the Land Commission, it is necessary to request written permission from the Keeper of Records, Land Commission, Agriculture House, Kildare Street, Dublin. You will have to name the estate you are interested in researching and schedule an appointment to view the material. The facility is not especially geared to suit researchers and can be tedious and long-winded. A better option is to browse the Land Commission reports housed at the National Library. A special survey was done on the Commission records during the 1970s, the end result being a report written up on each estate. These reports are bound and indexed, arranged alphabetically, and are broken down into baronies within counties. The National Library has a collection of manuscripts such as the Gormanston Papers, a collection of estate and family papers of the Preston family of Gormanston, in counties Meath and Dublin from 1605-1932. These documents contain original material related to the estates of many Irish families, and can be downloaded for free at http://www.nli.ien/manuscript-list-result-Griffith's valuation in 1844. The Lord Lieutenant instructed Richard Griffith to pursue an evaluation of every individual tenement in Ireland, no matter the size. Through this undertaking, valuers would attempt to calculate the net annual value of every Irish holding by assessing the annual rental value and subtracting necessary costs, such as insurance and maintenance. Agricultural land was valued by assessing the worth of its yield for a year. These valuations were quite detailed, and information such as the quality of the soil and market access was taken down. Of course, this information was all for the sake of taxation rate calculation, so was very thorough and complete. Completed in 1865, Griffith's valuation is most likely the richest source of genealogical information regarding Ireland in the 19th century. The valuation is quite conveniently documented, being broken into three different sections. There are first the notebooks of the original valuers that give incredibly detailed information on such things as building dimensions and sturdiness, soil quality, and the tenancy conditions. Secondly, there is the government printout of the valuation consisting of more than 200 volumes, and lastly there are the cancelled books, which document changes in the ownership and tenancy agreements from the time of the original valuation right up till the present. Finding your relative in Griffith's valuation. Finding an entry in Griffith's valuation is remarkably straightforward. If you know the name of the townland in which your ancestor lived, you can locate the name of the civil parish and barony in which it is located. Let's say you were looking for someone by the name of Peter Morris, who resided in the parish of Clonard in the poor law union of Irvinstown in County Fermanagh. You first would need to locate the relevant county volume and then the relevant entry under union, parish and townland. You might find that a Peter Morris occupied a house and land valued at £6, which he rented from Stephen Flynn the landlord. You might find other Morrises within the same parish, and it would be worth recording and researching those names as well, they could also be relatives. Griffith's valuation can help you to find where your ancestor lived in 19th century Ireland, and also cast some light on his or her social status and economic standing. In Northern Ireland you may find the valuation in the Public Record Office in Belfast, while in the Republic of Ireland it can be accessed in Dublin's National Archives. Griffith's valuation can be searched online for free at the Ask About Ireland website at http://www.askabout-ireland.ie. Griffith Valuation Poor Law Records. When the Poor Law Act was passed in 1838, it became Ireland's first statutory social service, introduced in order to provide for the poorest and most destitute in Ireland. The working of the Poor Law generated much material of interest to the genealogist, and contains records dating back to the 19th century. The Poor Law records are a rich source of information regarding the poorest social classes and the wealthy middle class and gentry who supported them. What was the Poor Law Act? At the beginning of the 19th century, approximately one-third of Ireland's total population were considered destitute, and lived in conditions similar to third-world countries today. A commission of inquiry was established in 1833 to investigate the conditions in which the poor were living at the time, the conclusion being that the people were in need of relief from poverty. The commission decided that the living conditions of the poor were primitive in the extreme, living in cottages with bare earth floors that were wet and damp from the old thatch roofs. Most had no beds or chimneys, the smoke from the cooking and heating fires circulating throughout the dwelling before escaping through the holes in the roof or out the front door. When beds were available, they were usually crammed with the parents and four or five children. Some families had the luxury of a blanket, but most did not and had to use whatever clothes they were not wearing to cover themselves. They ate of dried potatoes, usually one meal per day, and of course medical care was non-existent. To coordinate relief for the poor, Ireland was divided into unions, 130 to begin with, later increased to 163. Each union would have a workhouse at its center, and taxpayers from each union would elect a board of trustees, who would oversee the levy a compulsory tax and its distribution to the poor. The granting of aid was discretionary. No person was guaranteed relief, and all of this was overseen from Britain. To ensure that people did not abuse the system, conditions at the workhouses were intentionally made unbearable. Families were separated upon entry and the people were further divided by age and gender. None who were capable of employment were allowed to be idle at any time. The daily routine involved rising for breakfast at 6 a.m., continuous monotonous work thereafter before eating a cold evening meal, and going to bed in their overcrowded, unsanitary dormitories. The workhouses were places of last resort, only considered by the destitute as the very last alternative to starvation. How can poorhouse records help the genealogist? On entry into a poorhouse, the inmate or pauper, as they were referred to, had to have his personal details recorded in the workhouse register. The register was standardized for all workhouses across the country, and in it were recorded the person's name, sex, marital status, occupation, religion, physical condition, and former place of residence. The final column contained a space for when the person would leave the workhouse, by their own accord, or through death. Occasionally these details weren't completely written in, but generally the workhouse records are quite revealing. Because people could only be admitted to a workhouse as part of a family unit, information on the entire family can often be found in the admission records. As the workhouses contain their own hospitals, their records can cast light on each resident's physical condition as well. The main value of workhouse records, though, lies in the fact that they provide information on two mostly forgotten classes of people, the poor and the sickly. Ancestors who were unemployed and homeless can be hard to find. The workhouse records can possibly provide a clue as to their whereabouts. Where to find workhouse records? The main problem with workhouse records is that they haven't been well cared for and are scattered throughout Ireland and kept in various locations. For instance, the workhouse records of County Mayo are housed at the National Library in Dublin, while those of the North and South Dublin Unions are kept in the National Archives. Besides being difficult to track down, they are often bulky and unindexed when they are found. Those of Northern Ireland are better organized, all of them being centralized and deposited in the Public Record Office in Belfast. For other areas of Ireland, check in the county libraries. Some are held here, while others are kept in the county courthouse, such as those in Wicklow. Irish military records. Military records can be of great genealogical value, although few are indexed, and many can only be found at the Public Record Office, Q at the National Archives. Still, military records can often provide information that can't be found in other sources. Resources for military records for Irish personnel can be found at Army Records for the years 1913 to 1920 can be ordered from the following address: Army Records Centre, Bourne Avenue, Hayes, Middlesex, UB3. 1RF. England Navy records from 1913 onwards are at the following address: Ministry of Defence Main Building, Whitehall, SW102HB. England website, http://www.mod.uk. Defence Interned Home. Irish Defence Forces records dating from the foundation of the Irish Free State in 1922 to the present day are held by the Military Archives section at Cathalbra Barracks in Dublin, and can be requested from Officer in Charge, Military Archives, Cathalbra Barracks, Rothmans, Dublin 6. Republic of Ireland website, http://www.military.ie. Info Centre. Military Archives. Army muster rolls exist for the years 1760-1878, Navy muster rolls for 1667-1878, and can be found at the Public Record Office, Q at National Archives. The Irish Army Census Project has a collection consisting of 10 volumes of census returns for military personnel, which can be searched online at http://census-military-archives.ie. There is an index of Ireland's World War I veterans 1914-1918 at www.worldwar1veterans.com, and Ireland's Memorial Records for World War I can be searched at http. Imre and Flanders Fields be search HTML. Irish probate records. The majority of probate records created before 1858 were destroyed when the Public Record Office in Dublin burned in 1922. Fortunately, the original wills and admins had been indexed prior to the fire. Copies of these wills and administrations have been gathered into the National Archives and the Public Record Office of Northern Ireland, where they remain grouped by district. Family Search has a calendar of wills and administrations, 1858-1920, that is searchable online for free at https://familysearch.org. Search collection 1,921,305. Free indexes and wills for the three district probate registries of Armagh, Belfast, and Londonderry, and free online indexes to pre-1858 wills can be found at http://www.proni.gov.uk. Index search the archives will calendars. HTML calendars from 1922. 1922-1982 and instructions for searching them can be found online courtesy of the Irish National Archives at www.nationalarchives.ie. 17th and 18th century Irish genealogical records. Besides the six major sources, there are many 17th and 18th century cradles of information that may reveal valuable facts to the genealogist. Of course, the farther back in time you go, the more danger there is of encountering illiteracy and incomplete record-keeping practices, but you really never know where that genealogical gem is going to be mined from. The following is a list of 17th and 18th century sources that may provide further assistance in finding your Irish ancestor. 18th Century Records Registry of Deeds. This is perhaps the most important and fruitful of 18th century genealogical sources, but it is difficult to use. Because of its complexity, it is underused, but since its foundation in 1708, the registry has recorded thousands of land transactions in Ireland, and contains the names of landlords, tenants, and church and government officials. The registry is divided into two sections, the indexes, and the memorial books or deeds. These records are available to the public, and for a fee anyone can consult the indexes and transcript books, take notes of the contents and examine any deeds in the presence of an official. In order for the records to be of any use to you, it is necessary to know either the name of your ancestor's landlord, or the town land in which they lived. The original indexes and memorials are kept at the Registry of Deeds, Henrietta Street, Dublin, while the Public Record Office in Belfast has a complete set of copies. The registry contains over 3 million deeds in total, with 500,000 of them being deposited before 1832. The difficulty in their use comes from their bulkiness and the large amount of legal jargon used throughout. So, if you do visit the registry, it wouldn't hurt to be accompanied by a very large lawyer. Estate records. Many wealthy landlords kept estate records detailing every aspect of their empire, including tenant names, employee rosters and wage books, and transactions between all parties. Generally, the lease agreements and rent rolls provide the best information, as they often contain the names of any heirs of the landlord's holding. Casual employees are also sometimes included in estate records. You never know how you might come across your ancestor. If you know the name of your ancestor's landlord, you can avail of an estate record search. If you are unsure of the landlord's name, in Griffith's valuation there is a column headed immediate lesser where you'll find it. Some estate records are still privately held and may not be accessible, however the largest collection is held by the National Library in Dublin and the Public Records Office in Belfast. A smaller collection can be found in the National Archives. Flax Growers Bounty List 1796. During the 18th and 19th centuries, the manufacturing of linen was Ireland's most important industry. Concentrated in the north, a linen board was established to encourage the expansion of the trade. One of the ways of encouraging advancement in the industry was to award individuals with a spinning wheel or loom in exchange for planting flax. The linen board published a list of 55,000 souls who took advantage of the offer in 1796, most being from Donegal and Tyrone. If your ancestor was from Dublin or Wicklow, the list will be of no use to you, as there are no awards lists for those counties. The bounty list is arranged by civil parish. There is no mention of townlands or other administrative divisions. It does, however, provide the names of 55,000 small farmers in Ireland, and is particularly useful in that it can help to establish the parish address of your ancestor. The original list is held by the Linen Hall Library in Belfast, though the Public Records Office and Dublin's National Library have microfiche copies. Protestant Householders, 1740. This is a listing of all Protestant householders living in the northern counties of Antrim, Armagh, Derry, Donegal and Tyrone, and provides no information other than the householder's name. A typed, indexed copy is available for consultation at the Genealogical Office in Dublin. Census of 1745. This was a partial census taken of the west of Ireland and included parts of Galway, Roscommon and Sligo. It gives the name and occupation of the head of the house with details on children and servants. Occasionally the names of wives are included, And overall, this census is considered a useful source by genealogists due to the fullness and accuracy of information. A manuscript form of the report is maintained by the National Archives in Dublin. Militia rolls and paylists. Throughout the 17th and 18th centuries, local militias were employed for the purpose of protection for the Protestant settlers, or against the threat of invasion. The first Irish militia was exclusively Protestant, and was formed in 1666, when war broke out with France. In 1717, all Protestant males between the ages of 16 and 60 were required to assemble or muster 4 days in each year. For that purpose, they all had to register, copies of these lists being held by the National Archives in Dublin, and the Public Records Office in Belfast. 17th century records. The 17th century saw much land confiscated by the government and redistributed to new owners. In order to keep track of the many changes, various surveys were commissioned, and though not comprehensive, may provide useful in locating your ancestor, if you've managed to trace this far back. The surveys note who lost or acquired land during these turbulent times, and also list those who were loyal, and could be called to arms if needed. Many of these lists have been printed, and their main value is in providing precise addresses for people resident in areas where there was much upheaval. Following are the principal 17th century records, which may be of value in finding your Irish ancestor or further information about them. Muster rolls. 1631. The Plantation of Ulster was the organized colonization of Northern Ireland by nationals of Great Britain, and was spearheaded by James I. Land was taken from the Irish O'Neill and O'Donnell families and given to already wealthy British landowners. During the reign of James I, he ordered all English landlords to muster or gather their Protestant tenants for inspection, and to record their details. These lists include the names and details of any arms held by the person, and sometimes give their place of origin in England or Scotland. The surviving records can be found in the National Archives in Dublin and the Public Records Office in Belfast. Civil Survey, 1654-56. This survey was a result of an act known as the Act for the Satisfaction of Adventurers and Soldiers, which simply legislation which again took land from Irish owners, and gave it to those who were loyal to Oliver Cromwell. The survey also investigated the status of lands already owned by Protestant and English owners, and in that way is quite comprehensive. The survey was carried out by barony, and consequently subdivided into parishes and townlands. The names and the religion of all owners and the size of their land were recorded, and although the original returns were destroyed, copies for 10 copies survived and are held at the National Archives and Belfast's Public Records Office. Irish record depositories and useful online resources. The separation of Ireland into two different states has undoubtedly made genealogical research there more difficult than it need be, but overall, it's not so confusing. Basically, Northern Ireland is comprised of the 6 counties of Antrim, Armagh, Derry, Down, Fermanagh and Tyrone, while the remaining 26 are located in the Republic. Records for the Republic are mainly housed in Dublin, while those pertaining to the North are housed in Belfast. Depending on where your ancestor was born or resided, their records could be at either location. The following are the main depositories for records of genealogical value located in Northern Ireland and the Republic in the South. Republic of Ireland Depositories. The National Archives in 1988, the Public Record Office and the State Paper Office were amalgamated to form the National Archives. Though many records were destroyed during the Civil War in the attack on the Public Record Office in 1922, the archives are still a valuable resource. The National Archives are located in Dublin at the National Archives, 15 Bishop Street, Dublin 8, Ireland. Telephone +353 01 407 2300. Fax +353 01 407 2333. Website http://www.nationalarchives.ie. The National Library. The National Library of Ireland is very much centered on family research and even has a genealogy advisory service. Material of interest to genealogists kept by the library includes the microfilms of Catholic parish registers, copies of 19th century land valuations, the tithe up allotment books and Griffith's valuation, the ordnance survey books, and has an extensive catalog of genealogical reference books. The Genealogy Advisory Service is offered free of charge to all who call in person to the library, and is ideal for first-time researchers, who will be assisted by experienced library staff. Their address is the National Library, Kildare Street, Dublin 2, Ireland. Telephone +353 01 6030200. Fax +353 01 6612523. Website http://www.nli.ie. General Register Office. There grow is the place to go for any type of official documents relating to birth, death, or marriage. Certificates themselves can be obtained from the GRO, but the real value in this office is that they maintain a genealogical family history research facility. It is open from Monday to Friday, excluding public holidays, from 9.30 a.m. to 4.30 p.m., and is set up especially for the purpose of searching indexes to birth, death and marriage records and for obtaining photocopies of those records. The GRO Research Facility is located at 3rd floor, Block 7, Irish Life Centre, Lower Abbey Street, Dublin 1, Ireland. Telephone +353 090 6632900. Fax +353 090 6632999. Fax +353 090 6632988. Website http://www.groirland.ie. Northern Ireland Depositories Public Record Office. Another excellent resource for family historians, the PRONI contains copies of most of the vital documentation stored in Dublin, such as Griffith's valuation and the tithe up allotment books, as well as school records, business records, emigrant letters, and other records related to the six counties in the north. They are totally geared towards family history research, and have redesigned and restructured their website to make many of their resources available online. Their full address is Public Record Office of Northern Ireland, 66 Balmoral Avenue, Belfast, BT 9, 6, New York, Northern Ireland. Telephone +44 028 9025 5905. Fax +44 028 9025 5999. Website http://www.proni.gov.uk. The Registrar General's Office. Similar to the GRO in Dublin, this Belfast office contains all records of birth, deaths and marriages of those residing in Northern Ireland post-1921. Family historians can visit the office, but are advised to book an appointment at least 6 to 8 weeks in advance, as research terminals are limited in their public search room. Computerized indexes available at the Registrar General's Office are birth registration indexes from 1864 onwards, death registration indexes from 1864 onwards, marriage registration indexes from 1845 onwards, non-Roman Catholic marriages, and from 1864 onwards all marriages. World War II death indexes from 1939-1945. Contact information for the registrars: Oxford House, 49-55 Chichester Street, Belfast, BT 1, 4HL. Telephone 101. If calling from within NI, a low cost number 028-90252000. Text phone 028-90252123. Fax 028-90252120. Website http://www.groni.gov.uk. The Linenhow Library, founded in 1788 by 19 prominent citizens, the Linenhow Library has an exceptionally valuable genealogical collection. Most of the collection is open to the public, and certain articles are available on loan. The primary sources include the Blackwood P. Diaries, which is a collection of over 1,000 manuscript family trees, and an index to births, marriages, and deaths from the Belfast Newsletter, an Irish newspaper that began publication in Belfast in 1738. Their address and contact information is Linen Hall Library, 17 Donegal Square, North Belfast, BT 1, 5GB, Northern Ireland. Telephone - +44 028 9032 1707. Fax - +44 028 9043 8586. Website http://www.linenhall.com. Valuable online resources listed here are websites that have searchable databases and or that can assist you with your record search. Irish Family History Foundation. The Irish Family History Foundation is the home of a web of county-oriented genealogical research bases in Ireland. They have digitized millions of Irish genealogical records, consisting of church records, census returns, and gravestone inscriptions. The website contains information on each individual county's IFHF center. http://www.irishroots.ie. Cavan Genealogy Database, part of the Irish Genealogical Online Record Search System. This site contains the largest collection of Ireland's parish records that are searchable online. Search is free, subject to their conditions. http://cavanbrusgenealogy.com. Clare County Library. The website of the Clare County Library has a searchable online database, which includes the 1901 census report, Griffith's valuation for Clare, and may other reports and directories. http://www.clarelibrary.ie. Donegal Ancestry Center. The Donegal Ancestry Center was established with the sole purpose of helping people trace their Donegal ancestors, and is the official family history research center for County Donegal. http://www.donegalancestry.com. Ask about Ireland. This is an initiative of public libraries, local museums, and archives who have combined to propagate the digitization and online publication of Griffith's valuation and other resources that may be useful to genealogists. http://www.askaboutireland.ie. Irish Times Digital Archive contains exact reproductions of every article published in the Irish Times from 1859 to present. http://www.askaboutireland.ie. Related archives. Irish Times. Irish Genealogical Research Society. This organization was established in London in 1936 in order to encourage and promote the study of Irish genealogy, and to amass a collection of books and manuscripts of genealogical value. This is a private organization with membership dues. http://www.igrsoc.org. Ireland's Gravestone Index. Here you can search gravestone inscriptions. http://www.irishworld.com. Gravestones Index. CFM. The Irish Genealogical and Historical Society. The IGHS collects and preserves information illustrative of Ireland's past and present. A portion of their website is designed to display individual family histories in one searchable list. Their service is offered free to the public through the generous donations of supportive individuals. Irish Genealogical and Historical Society, IGHS, 35702 Nee 80th Street, Carnation, WA 98014, 425-333-6611. Website, IGHS@comcast.net. Irish Family History Society. The Irish Family History Society has a huge library of historical books and journals, as well as other valuable resources for members. Irish Family History Society, 13 St. Nissim's Drive, Raheny, Dublin 5, Ireland. Email, ifs@eircom.net. Website, http://www.ifhs.ie. About the author. Gary L. Morris worked from 2009 to 2014 as a professional researcher for a major player in the genealogy field. After tracing his family lineage back to 1683, he found that genealogy could be an expensive undertaking. He consequently decided to publish a line of helpful guides that would help others to trace their family lineages as quickly and inexpensively as possible. Thus the handy genealogy handbooks were born, presently one for each state in the United States of America and one for Irish genealogy research. An avid genealogist himself, he has designed them to take researchers right to the source, most of which are free. Notes.